We're going to talk about Mike at the Movies. Well, Mike at the Matinee comes back, or some movies. Are we matinee or movies this time? We're going to say it's movies because it's a movie now? I don't know what it is. Because we have spoken about Hamilton on this show in the past. So back in 2018, I think January of 2018, I had seen Hamilton for the first time in London. It had also been the first time I had heard Hamilton. Like, I purposefully avoided it because I was waiting for the London run. And so gave kind of my initial impressions of the show. So I recommend, if you haven't heard that, there'll be a link in the show notes where you can go and check that out, which will also take you to a page on The Incomparable, which you may not know about, which is kind of about a month or two after every Mike at the Movies segment, Jason clips those out, and they're in a special standalone feed, which if you ever want to go back and listen to any of the Mike at the Movies segments that we've done, they're there for you. So that's just a fun little thing that Jason does. Yeah. One of my favorite podcast artworks that I have, that I actually have a poster of on my wall that our designer Simon made for me.
That's beautiful.
It's because it's just wonderful. I love it. So, okay, so Hamilton debuted on Disney Plus. It was originally going to be a theatrical release in October of 2021, but they brought it forward significantly.
Yeah, there is. There have been a lot of interviews and stuff. The idea here, not only are people kind of hungry for content, and that Disney Plus felt like this was an opportunity for Disney Plus, and also we've been seeing all of the theatrical releases being scrambled around and stuff getting deferred, and some stuff gets deferred and some stuff gets moved to streaming. That seems to be what's happening, right? And so they decided to move this forward. And the way that Lin-Manuel Miranda discussed it in some of the interviews that I've seen with him is... he also felt like we're in an era now where live theater is shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And so this also has the advantage of bringing kind of the feel of live theater to people who are not able to see live theater and the whole live theater experience. But they did have to negotiate. My understanding is they had to negotiate with all of the people who have financial participation in the movie, because a lot of that stuff was based on box office.
Yeah.
And there's no box office, so they had to make a new deal to compensate those people in order to put it on. Because now, you know, obviously there's no box office, but it still has direct benefit to Disney by making Disney Plus more valuable.
Yeah, and I think that was why it ended up being a lot of money that Disney gave to this. It was $75 million. Oh, no, that was for the rights to make the film. I'm sure there was more money distributed, yeah, because people that had an option or something on it, I don't remember the phrase, but people that would get some kind of residual check, right, some royalty check, they're not going to get that, because that's not how streaming services work.
Yeah, if they had a deal that was based at least in part on ticket sales, there are no ticket sales, so they have to change that deal. And they probably had a residual deal about streaming that was anticipating it would be a smaller cut following the bigger cut of theatrical. And of course there is no, it's the only cut. So they seem to have come to some arrangement, and the result is that everybody who lives in a place with Disney Plus can see Hamilton now.
So I will say it was super nice over the weekend to see pretty much everyone I follow online enjoying something collectively. It feels like it's been a long time since I've seen something like that.
There's been, you usually have the kind of the doom scrolling thing where everything is just sad and everybody is sad. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, in his, there's an extras, there's like a 30-minute long interview with the cast and crew.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't know what I'm watching tonight.
Is in the extras. And it's nice. I mean, it's nice. It's like a little thing. It's not like a big documentary or something. It's just a little Zoom chat, basically.
I've seen the documentary. With a bunch of the people. Is it Hamilton's America? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, the PBS show. Yeah. But yeah, this... So it's a little conversation, and it's nice. But one of the things in it that blew my mind, but I think he's right, is Lin-Manuel Miranda said, you know, you do this show and you do it every night for 5 years and a few traveling productions, and it's for 1,500 people. And he said, to think about it, that over the 4th of July weekend, more people will see Hamilton than ever saw it before.
Jeez.
Put together. All of it put together. And I think he's right. I think if you do the math, he's probably right. Which is fascinating, right? Like, people who heard the soundtrack and stuff, but did they get... I mean, you have to be able to... First off, the hard ticket to get, not in very many cities. You'd have to... Even if you're in those cities, you might not be able to get in. And theater tickets are very expensive. So there are lots of people who know nothing about Hamilton who watched it, and lots of people who have listened to the soundtrack. It's the original cast recording. It's not a soundtrack. And they haven't seen it. And yep. now they all get to see it. Does it sound like something that I've been corrected on before? Say soundtrack so much, but it's not a soundtrack. It's an original cast recording. It's totally different.
But there was some stuff online over the weekend that I'd never seen before, which was comments about the politics of Hamilton, like from a critical perspective, which I'd never really seen. And I thought that it was, I just wanted to talk about it real quick.
Some of it, but yes, it's worth talking about.
It had never come across my radar before. And I think there's a couple of reasons for this why now. Like, I mean, one, everyone is experiencing Hamilton at the same time, which is not the way that Hamilton has typically been experienced. It's on like a staggered rolling thing, right? As people go see it or find right. the album for the first time. And then also, we live in a time right now which is just very political, right? Like, that's in every sense of the word. Like, that's kind of where we are at the moment at this point in the timeline. And so I wanted to kind of, I've been reading some of the stuff. So it's like, it's worth remembering that many of the men depicted in this, we'll say movie, for just to keep it easy at this point, were slave owners, right? Because they were people of power, and that was something that they did. It's very briefly addressed during one of the rap battles, right? Where I think it's Hamilton says to
Jefferson
yes. about like who's doing the planting, right?
Yeah, so that's right.
And also does call him a slaver at one point.
Yeah, and there in that same rap battle, and there's some other references too. Yep. There's a reference to Sally Hemings, who was Jefferson's slave, who he also fathered children with. There are several references to John Lawrence being attempting to free the slaves and wanting slavery to end. So mm-hmm. slavery is engaged with briefly in Hamilton, yep. but it's not what it's about. Yeah.
No, and so there's people that say, and I can understand this point of view, that like because they are the heroes of this piece.
Yeah, or at least yes.
glorified, right? Because people look up to them, or you know what has happened since is like people have a renewed interest in learning about Hamilton, right? So people want to look up to him like they do the other founding fathers, but he is also like many of the men depicted in this piece, they are like problematic, especially by today's standards, right? But even going yeah. back, right?
Even then, I mean, that's part of the argument, is that the show also depicts that people thought during the Revolution thought that slavery was immoral, but politically they had to compromise on it. And although the show doesn't get into it, I think it's not fair to say that nobody gave any thought to the fact that slavery was immoral during the American Revolution. Yeah. Like that's not the case. Although I would also say about heroes, like we got to choose our words carefully here, because one of the things that Hamilton, I think, is really good at is humanizing these figures that are just powerful, mythical figures mm-hmm. in American culture. But humanizing doesn't mean lionizing, right? It means you see how petty they are and how self-interested they are. And of course they were human beings. I would say, I think the strongest argument is that Washington is portrayed in the most glowing terms of anybody, any man in Hamilton.
He's like a god in this.
And we know, yeah, Washington was a slave owner, and he inherited those from his wife, and yes, he freed them upon his death, but he didn't free them before that. And so Washington is, and again, it's not about Washington, and it's complex, but like I do think like Jefferson, the way Jefferson is portrayed, and I think it's worth, and Lin-Manuel Miranda has said this on Twitter, actually, he says it is always worth engaging with it. He said in his interview that is part of the extras, people ask him if the show's meaning has changed as time has moved along. Mm-hmm. And he said, like from the Obama era to the Trump era. And he said, no, the show's meaning remains what it was, but what we take from it and what we see in it changes as the times change, which is how it is with art, and it's how it should be. And I think this is a great example of that too, mm-hmm. about how thinking about America's racial issues and its original sin of slavery, and thinking about Hamilton and asking the question, you know, is this another example of the kind of American mythology that perpetuates racism in America. That is a thing, that is a very of the moment thing to engage with in the show. That said, you can't talk about Hamilton without talking about the way Hamilton is cast, because yep. that's not a quirk that it's all people of color in these founding father roles in Hamilton. It's
and
not
basically
a quirk.
Every
it's
other
a,
role, right?
Yeah. Like, well, you know. I mean, other than like the king and yeah, but it's a statement and implicit again, and it's not just a statement about how people of color are not treated well in the theater world. It is a statement about the myth making mm-hmm. of American history and about racism that has been in existence in America since the beginning. Like, it's that's what that is about on a very clear level. And like, that's Lin-Manuel Miranda saying the people of color were always part of America, that you can't hide them, that they built this country too. And that when you engage with a person of color as George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, it obviously immediately has multiple levels, because we know, ideally, you know, that like Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner. And also it's David Diggs, a black man, an amazing rapper, by the way, just amazing, talented, incredibly talented person. So that's one of the things I love about Hamilton, is that there's so many different levels it's operating on. It's so ambitious. And I think it is great, as Lin-Manuel Miranda said, to talk about these issues regarding Hamilton. But like, I think Hamilton passes the tests, right? Because this is what Hamilton is about. It's all there for you to take from it. I don't feel it, other than, like I said, George Washington is given a pass at a level that maybe the other characters aren't, but like, they're human and they're messed up. And like, the title character Hamilton is completely self-destructive. We haven't even talked about the fact that I think at its core, one of the main things Hamilton is about, it's about a lot of things, is about how badly the women are treated in this period,
yeah,
and how vital and important the women are, and yet how everything is turned against them at every point, and how the men in their lives ignore them and go on with being the great man when the women are right there. Like, there's so much about that. It's about a lot of things too, and that's why I love it, is that it's so ambitious and it's so largely successful. But that doesn't mean that it isn't worth, like, it kind of wants you to engage with it, and it wants you to ask those questions. That's another thing I love about it.
I think that it has actually taken on this whole new meaning again, which, I mean, it was really like coincidental, right? Like, this was announced to be coming to Disney Plus before the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement, but has ended up landing at a time where people have this type of stuff front of mind again.
Somebody, and I think it's Leslie Odom Jr. who plays Burr, who is the main character of Hamilton, by the way, and yep. and is also a really messed up character, right? He's mm-hmm. the villain, but he is the main character in Hamilton, I would argue very strongly. He said that his last performance on Broadway, I think it was him, he dedicated the performance to Philando Castile. And his point was, you know, it's been since then, and here we are again, with another black man killed by police. So, yeah. So, and that's all in there. I really do recommend that extra interview thing. It's good, because it's the whole cast and talking about how current events impact them.
Yeah.
And how their lives changed and how it was set up. There's a wonderful interview with Leslie Odom Jr. in the LA Times that talks about how little they got paid when it was in, I think they didn't get paid when it was in workshop, and they got paid almost nothing when it was at the public theater. And then they extended the run at the public theater before it came to Broadway. And he said, wait for it, is not just about Burr. It is about also him knowing this is going to be something, but spending huge amounts of time with almost no compensation to get to the point where they finally, you know, changed the balance of how people get paid if you're in a Broadway hit, which they did ultimately. It's just, there's a lot going on here.
So for me, this movie, like, I don't look at it as a way for me to learn history. I mean, because one, like, I don't really care that much about the history of the founding fathers of America. Like, I'm sorry.
Sure.
Like,
no, I think it's good intriguing to have that perspective, because a lot of people are like, but why do I care?
Right. Like, it's intriguing to me. I didn't even know Alexander Hamilton. I didn't know he existed until this. So, I found that part interesting to even learn about someone who seemed to be pretty important in American history that didn't get the same kind of treatment that the other founding fathers did.
That's right.
But what I like about this this musical, and what my personal themes from it, why it touches me, is the themes of love, legacy, and forgiveness. Like, they are incredibly well done for me in this. Like, it's love of all kinds, and legacy is the big thing, right?
Sure.
Like, for me, like, that I take from this, like, who lives, who dies, who tells your story. Like,
yep.
That rings in my mind a lot. Like, it's an incredibly important thing, and it's the part of the musical that hits me the most is the final song. So Eliza's final song, right, where she goes on, and like Eliza ends up being the one that tells the story, and then she kind of stands at the end as like,
right,
I made all of this happen, right? Like, without me, you wouldn't know any of this, because most of that story would never have been told, because she erased it. Right, until she decided to bring the story back again, and lives on and tells the story of all of them for a long period of time. And that moment, like, I can't. So what is his son's name?
Philip.
From when Philip has the duel, I can't listen to the music. Like, I've only heard those songs like 5 or 6 times, because I heard them the first time, then I listened to it all once through, and then it's just been the 2 other times I've seen it live, and when I saw it over the weekend, because they destroy me. Like, I can't, yeah. I can't do it, right? So, like, unless I am watching it, it's the only time that I can ever listen to it, because every time I have seen this, by the end of it, I am a blubbering mess. Because that's when all of the things that touch me the most really take a crescendo in this, as everyone starts to die and everyone starts to try and atone for the things that they have done to upset people in their lives, right? Like, that is like, that's when it gets me.
Yeah. And it's the classic second act problem of biographies, which is the one I always bring up is, I don't know if you've ever seen Lawrence of Arabia, but the first, and that's a very long movie with an intermission. The first act, also I think every Stephen Sondheim musical is like this too. The first act is this delightful thing. So, you know, the delightful adventures of Lawrence, or the delightful adventures of Alexander Hamilton. And then the second act, you know what happens in the second act, because that's life, right? Like, it goes bad and people die, and then the protagonist dies, and the end, womp womp, right? Like, that's kind of, I keep seeing it, and it's kind of funny that that's the shape of it. But yeah, you're right. Second act's got a lot of amazing stuff in it, but you're right. There is a point at which it is much more emotionally rough sledding. Beautiful, but harder to watch, for sure.
Because it is also when, like, the majority of my favorite songs are there, but I can't listen to them. Like, basically, like, for me, I think my favorite performance in the whole show is Philippa Sue, who plays Eliza.
Yeah.
Like, Burn and Who Lives, Who Dies, Who Tells Your Story, like, they're, like, absolutely unbelievable, and I'm so happy that this movie exists so I can see her sing these songs, because I would never get them otherwise. Because, you know, like, I have seen a completely different cast, right? Like, I have seen the London cast, and like the Hamilton of the London cast and the First Burr that I saw were my favorites. Like I actually, in their own way, like them more to the original cast recordings, because it's different people. They do it in different ways. And I've seen, there's been a different Burr that I've seen in London who I don't like as much. Right. And it's just your own personal tastes. And I'm sure for me, it's partly because that's the first time I'd really experienced a lot of it. But, you know, I've listened to, there is, I'll put this in the show notes, it actually just appeared in the Discord, there's a version of Burn which includes all five of the women who have played Eliza. There is a version. I think there's a version with three. I'll find it for the show notes. We're like three of the Eliza sing Burn. And Philippa Sue just absolutely knocks it out of the park for me. I think that she is unbelievable. And part of the reason that I love those songs so much is because of the tone that she set in them. Because that's so interesting about this. Cast anyways. Like, this is a musical that people love and adore, and they see it all over the world, and there's all these different traveling companies and different companies. But this group of people, they set what the musical should sound like, right? Mm-hmm. And every person who plays these roles in all the different productions still try and emulate a little bit of the original, right? Because, like, that's the sound of that person. And so I'm so happy that I now have the ability to see these people do it, right? Like, it's what I've kind of always wanted to.
Yep. I wanted to mention, by the way, I've had multiple people who watched Altered Carbon on Netflix then see Hamilton and are like, oh! Because Renee Elise Goldsberry, who is Angelica Schuyler,
mm-hmm.
She's in Altered Carbon, both seasons of it on Netflix. And I have a lot of friends who watch sci-fi TV, right, who watch Altered Carbon. And I watched Altered Carbon and said, oh, yeah, it's Renee Elise Goldsberry from the original cast of Hamilton. But lots of people didn't. They didn't, you know that, and they didn't go see her in Hamilton. And they watched Altered Carbon, and this happened multiple times, like over the weekend, where they're like, oh, because they did it in the other order. They saw her in Altered Carbon and then they saw her in Hamilton. But yeah, and a lot of these cast have turned up in other places since then, so you may be like, oh, that's that guy from, yeah, I see now, it makes sense. I think one of the great things about this movie as a movie is that it's theater, and it's not like a movie made out of a stage production, but it is a stage production, which is brilliant. And I wish this would happen more. I understand why it doesn't. There are lots of reasons. It's very expensive to do something like this, so you kind of have to have a mega hit. You also don't want to take away the money stream from all of the ancillary productions and all of that. But I do wish that this happened more often, where people who are not able to go to the theater could see a film as theater in a brilliant kind of mixture. So, like, we hear the audience, except... And I think this is a really nice detail. When Lin-Manuel Miranda first says Alexander Hamilton, in the show, when Alexander Hamilton says that line, the whole audience erupts and they have to stop and wait for like 20 seconds for the applause to die down before the song can continue. And one of the conditions that Lin-Manuel Miranda made was, we're not going to do that. Like, we're not going to do that. So there, he introduces himself. There's no audience reaction. They used a different shot, and they changed the audio.
Huh.
So he is introduced with no pause. And their argument was that applause is for the phenomenon of Hamilton, not for the show, because it's just the beginning of the show.
Yeah,
there's no reason for Hamilton to get applause there because he hasn't earned it yet. And the show hasn't earned it yet. And I love that approach. So the audience is in it for the rest of the time, and they applaud, and it's awesome, and it's like you're in the theater. But they cut that one because they felt like, no, we haven't earned your love yet. And so it would seem weird. And then the other thing that I think was really brilliant is they shot it from the mezzanine, and they've got a couple other angles, and they shot, I think, two live performances in New York. And then on one of their dark days where they aren't performing, they went in, and I think maybe they even also canceled a performance to do this, but what they did is they rigged the whole thing, and they ran through like 20 numbers with cameras and with a crane.
Yeah.
And they shot, they like actively, like a movie,
so confused.
Shot those shots. Yeah.
Right. It's like, where are the cameras? Right. Cause you would get these times where there are clearly handheld cameras shooting them. But then it goes to a wide shot and there's no camera person on stage. And it's because they did these three different recordings we used to say, like, two with audiences, probably in case there's anything they wanted to change. Then they have, and they also have the ability for multiple takes. But then they also did the quiet one where they could get some close-ups. It's really, I think, very, very cleverly done.
Yeah, and camera moves. I mean, there's some cameras up above that they use a couple of times, I think sparingly and also brilliantly, to, so you can see people moving around on stage. Mm-hmm. But some of those close-ups, the moment where Jonathan Groff as the king basically spits while he's talking. He's flying everywhere and it's hanging on his face for the rest of it. It's so good.
I was so happy to see his close-ups because, like, the first song, like, he barely blinks. Like, it was just nice in general because the facial expressions that you see and you see between the actors, that's stuff you don't even really get to see when you're in the theater.
Unless you're in the expensive seats. So Lauren has a story about how she went at some point to see a show and was in, like, the second row or the third row. And it was the first time she'd ever been up close to live theater. And she said, oh, look, they're acting. Like, because when you're in the mezzanine or the balcony, you're not seeing the facial expressions, right? So that they got some of that in there, and that there are some camera flourishes. There's a moment in the room where it happens, which is all about Aaron Burr being on the outside looking in at Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson cutting a backroom deal. And there's a shot where, like, the camera is framed so that they're towering over Burr and they're in focus and he's out of focus in the foreground. Hmm. And it's his song, but he's out of focus. And it's like, that's what that song is about. And that shot is all about it. It's a nice cinematic moment without you forgetting that you're on a stage, which I think was a great decision. There's also a moment where George Washington walks out onto the stage and we cut to a reverse shot that's at the back of the stage as he walks out. And I saw somebody was complaining. They thought that was like too much. And took you out of the moment, and I giggled when that shot happens because I think it's so delightful. Like, here he comes, and we're right behind George Washington as he strides out onto the set, and you see the audience in the background, or, you know, the open theater. It's like, I love that. It's great. So I think it's really well done in finding the balance between being a movie but also being really a cinematic document of a theater experience. And like I said, I understand why we don't get more of these, but I wish we got more of these because otherwise it's great that theater is a thing that is between the audience and the performers and you see it and it's magic and it never happens again. I get that. At the same time, when we talk about WWDC, I'm going to bring it all the way back around here, Mike, and how putting everything online and having everybody all around the world be able to see it gives them access, gives everybody access to what Apple is doing instead of just the people who pay a lot of money to come to San Jose for a week. And that's one of the things I love about this Hamilton is so many people couldn't see Hamilton and can't see Hamilton. And to have this moment and this amazing piece of work and these amazing cast members do this thing, I don't want it to be completely lost. It would be nice if we could take a little part of it and bottle it up and let anyone see it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what this is. And that's awesome. I love that. And then you can like it or not like it. But the fact that you never got to see it, you never had a chance because it was too expensive and too hard to get tickets and far away, all those reasons. Now you can. I love that so much.
And, like, there is a sliding scale to it. Like, I don't think that this movie existing ruins the theater buying experience, because the way I kind of see it is you've got the album, the original cast recording. Watching the movie is more enjoyable than that, but seeing in the theater is more enjoyable than watching the movie if you're able to do it, because it's a different experience. There's a different...
Yeah.
It's different watching of a large audience. And
this does not replace theater, but it supplements it. And for a lot of people, theater isn't an option. And right now, theater isn't an option for anybody. But theater, the tickets are so expensive, and you've got to be fortunate to get the tickets and all that. Like, that's the part. It's not a replacement for live theater, and I don't think it should be. And I'm not saying that it is, but I'm so glad that it can also exist because it does. It exists in that little space between the cast recording,
like, and I'm so happy.
The theater or the movie. Like, if they made an acted out movie, like, well, not like Cats, but you get what I'm saying. That would not be like the same either. Yeah.
It's like, I'm so happy they did this, right? Because they did it with the original cast, which, you know, I've always wanted to see, never would be able to. And also, like, it wasn't a movie with them, Ethan. which I wouldn't want. I want to see them do it. Like, you know, like it wasn't like we're going to be in these big sets or whatever, right? Like, even if they were able to assemble the original Broadway cast to make a quote unquote movie version of Hamilton, like, I wanted this. Like, I wanted to see what it was like. Because again, it's like, all right, it's the original cast, but they sing it differently to the album.
Right.
Which I love.
Because they've been doing it for like a couple of years.
They live it, right? Like, by that point, they're not just singing it the way Lin-Manuel Miranda and the team there, like, suggest they do it, right? Like, by that point, they've lived these characters. They have their own way of presenting them. They change some of the way that things are presented to make different jokes or to make points differently. And that was really wonderful to see as well, because I wasn't necessarily expecting it from this group, right? Because, like, for me, it's like, oh, I've seen it done in different ways. Like, for me, like, the king... Like, Jonathan Groff has changed so much of his songs and the presentation of them from the original recordings. And that's because he got a sense of what it was like to be that character because of the way the audiences would end up reacting to him, right?
And exactly. And that's the beauty of doing it over and over and over again is, I mean, I was in my high school play, and we had three performances, and I will tell you, my performance in number two was entirely based on how people reacted to number one, mm-hmm. and my performance in number three was entirely based on how people reacted to number two. And that was three performances with somebody who's a terrible actor in a high school production of Dracula, okay? And I can only imagine what goes through the minds of a talented professional at the top of their game on Broadway in a role like this, where they get hundreds of performances to either fine-tune what works and what doesn't, think more about like what the options are, and also play, right? Also try some different stuff. And I think that's great. I heard a story about when they were at the Public Theater, how Leslie Odom Jr. as Aaron Burr, he has to do one of those, How Does a Bastard Orphan, right? Like, he has to do a bunch of those about Hamilton throughout the show. And he came out one day and he got it wrong. He got the wrong one. He did the wrong one. And then he was like, oh no. And after that, he had cards of what they were in what order that he kept with him all the time, apparently. So that he never messed it up again. It's like professionalism. I love it. But like, that's part of the magic of theater is you get these people who inhabit these parts. Because in film and TV, you inhabit the roles, but you're not thinking about the choices because it's a different episode week to week. But in film, you know, you think about it, you do a read-through or whatever, but then you just shoot it and it's like that forever. And theater's not like that. And by getting them on day 500 of Hamilton instead of day 10, we get the benefit of them knowing that this is the version that's going to be captured and all the knowledge that they built up over time.
It's a wonderful thing. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. I'm expecting if you've listened to this part of the show, you have seen it. But there are always people that listen to these things having never seen it. I know I've done stuff like that. It really is just a wonderful piece of art. It's honestly one of my very favorite pieces of art ever. Like, it's top three, I think. I adore Hamilton. Like, the way it makes me feel, the things it makes me think about. I've never encountered a piece of art which has affected me in the way that this does. I know what's coming, and I cry my eyes out every single time. And I'm not talking like tears. I'm talking like I have been in a theater three times, my body physically shaking from crying. It happened to me just watching it this weekend, right? Like, this really is just a wonderful thing in a number of ways. And I am so happy now that people can get it in a much, much easier way than they've ever been able to get it before. And if you don't have Disney Plus, like, you can sign up for like a fiver, right? Like, and or I think there might be a free trial probably in some places. Like, do what you can to see this thing. You will not regret it, I think.